As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a gangster.
Nine to noon.
Time for two more.
And he's
Paul Allen.
Pick you up, Pollywog.
Nine to noon.
Son of a.
The game is over.
Sports North with the highlight, Paul Allen, FM 100.3, KFAN, 9 to noon radio, Brian Heating and Cooling Studios, joined now by Timberwolves head coach Ryan Saunders. Ryan, you and fellow former Gopher J.B. Bickerstaff have had some terrific battles the last week. You split with him. How do you feel about that? And good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on. I know it's been a while coming here, but We JB's a friend. We've talked a good amount, and over the past few years and our time in the NBA, and then also since taking over this role here. So having being able to battle against a friend, it's like when you're growing up and you're playing basketball, or you're competing just against some of your close with.
So you guys lose in a very difficult way, and we just heard the highlight with Dave Benz and Jim Peterson. 0.1 to go in the game. Foul called on Josh Okogie against Justin Holiday. Tell me I'm wrong here. Okogie probably fouled Holiday right at the end, but that's a really tough call to make at that stage of the game.
Yeah, I'm not even really going to get into that. I've always gone with the mindset of a game is not won and lost. The game can be determined on one play,
right?
But the game isn't won and lost on one possession necessarily. We had 47 minutes and 59 seconds in that game to have a chance to win it by doing other things correctly. So if you do everything else perfectly,
yep,
then you can point to maybe one possession on a last possession. But hey, we didn't have everything going last night.
You and JB's Grizzlies, you guys had a couple of fascinating games in the course of 1 week. You guys are blowing them out. They come back. You win on Cat's fadeaway in overtime. They're blowing you out. You guys come back, and then you lose right at the wire. I mean, a couple of grimy games.
Yeah. I mean, and that's playing down in Memphis is hard. The way they play with things, but I think that's both a testament to both teams in terms of how hard we are. Guys are playing on both sides. Both teams have been undermanned with things, and in those situations, though, those are the games that can get interesting because other guys step up, and these are professionals who work hard on their crafts, and they are waiting for opportunities. So when opportunities come, guys are ready to show.
Ryan, most of the games since you've been the coach have been very close and very emotional. Do you feel like you're aging at a very fast pace because of these games?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even taken a step back to think like that. Hey, do you wish every game was a 30-point blowout where you can sit in your favor, where you can sit in the fourth quarter. I mean, yeah, you do, but that's not the way it goes. But I mean, you know, the one thing I'll say to all that is that being in every game means that guys are doing some things right and guys are really competing. So you know, we just need to continue to build and make you know every play a winning play.
Weird question, Ryan, and I'm probably wrong. Early afternoon, mid afternoon, when you guys hear Marc Gasol is out and Mark's very good, do you think? Do you have to say to the guys one of their best players is out, but don't take your foot off the gas? Do you think that played into the slow start?
Yeah, we did. We talked about that, and we reiterated that, you know, a good amount. And, I think it's natural sometimes to let your guard down with things. But, you know, that's something that comes with growth. That's something that comes over time on things with players and, you know, with groups. So, you know, when we hear that next time, you know, we should be more ready to handle that situation.
Timberwolves interim head coach Ryan Saunders on the 9 to noon radio show. His Timberwolves are 4 games from a playoff spot, still with plenty of time to catch that. How much are you loving being a head coach in the NBA?
Yeah, I mean, you love it a lot more when you win. I know that. And it's one of those things that you haven't, you can't really take, I mean, you know, eventually, and that could happen, you know, during the All-Star break where you take a day and you are able to take a step back and really realize the magnitude of things. But I'm going, you know, I've said it, I'm going day by day, hour by hour right now and you know, game by game and doing everything I can to help prepare our guys to win with things. But, you know, it can be a surreal moment in terms of just thinking about sometimes, you know, you have a dream, you know, at a younger age. And when you get to that point, you know, it's special.
Well, as an assistant coach, you forever were on the grind, you know, doing what you were doing. But now as a head coach, you own everything. So it probably, trying to find routes to win and routes to get your players to play best, it's probably every thought every day, right?
Yeah, it is. It's every thought every day. You're constantly thinking about it, and you know, I'll say I enjoy the challenge, and I'm committed to the growth of you know, both this team, the organization, and myself with things.
Where does Jerry Seestein help you most?
You know, Jerry's been a guy, and I know people in Minnesota are familiar with him. You know, Jerry's been around the league, you know, both as a player and a coach for a long time. And he's, you know, just having another ear, having another voice to, you know, to really know kind of the way I am and the way, you know, we want to do things, is important. And Jerry's been good for me. And I'll say, you know, it's, the whole staff. I mean, we got really good staff here, and everybody contributes. Everybody has a voice, and you know, it's gone well so far.
Karl Anthony Towns is a terrific basketball player. Ryan, mm-hmm. Do you think he's playing with more of an edge since he earned that All-Star berth?
Yeah, I mean, I think he is. You know, it's like anything. You know, you want to have that. You know, for the whole game and every night, with things, with every player in the NBA. And he's moving towards that. I mean, that's a hard thing for guys to do that for a whole game, but he's, you can look at him and say he's really moving towards that because he is playing really aggressive. And he's, you know, I think once you, especially one All-Star nod, you know, that happens, and two All-Star nods, okay, then you get a little more of a target on your back,
yeah,
per se, and he's taking that challenge.
Well, Wiggins can be, viewing it from afar, Wiggins can be very frustrating. What are some keys to working with him to gaining consistent aggressiveness?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm the first one to say that I believe in Andrew, and I'm going to continue to believe in Andrew. And he, you know, we early in the game, we like when he gets the ball to the rim. We like when he's aggressive and in pick and rolls. And he's got a lot of talent. He's got a lot of talent. And, you know, it's about doing little things, like it is for everyone. When, hey, maybe your shot's not falling, but let's go get 7 rebounds with things. And we've seen a lot of that from him, over the past, little bit here.
Dario Saric gave you 22, 5 assists and 7 boards last night. Do you feel he's turning a corner for you?
We do. And he's, he had a great practice. Like, he had the best practice since he was traded to Minnesota, the other day. I think it was, 2 days ago. And, you get a sense of, and we've tried to put in some more things where he's able to get shots and maybe be a little bit of a playmaker too, get him the ball, get him a little more comfortable. And, we ran more of that last night and he was really the guy that brought it from the start and brought it the whole game.
You know, with the 22, 5, and the 7, and he hit 4 threes, I think he's a sneaky good passer, isn't he? I mean, he had an in-the-key pass to Gorgui Dieng, a bounce pass, that was an absolute masterpiece.
Yeah, and he's intelligent. He's basketball intelligent. And for him to be able to how he gets through traffic without being necessarily the most athletic guy on the court, and he's able to get through there and make passes and make plays. He's a talent, and we look forward to having him for a long time.
Teague, Jones, Rose, Covington, getting any of your guys back anytime soon?
We hope so. It's hard to win on a nightly basis in this league at full strength,
yeah.
Let alone, having guys injured. But, I give a lot of credit to Jared Bayless and guys who have stepped up and I've said it, over this past, few weeks, month here, is that, we're a no excuse basketball team, and it's a next man up situation. You obviously want to be at full strength, but we're never going to use that as a crutch.
Last one, Ryan Saunders, interim head coach for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Ryan, whether it's this opportunity or back to the days with your dad, how much has Glenn Taylor meant to you?
Yeah, I mean, he's meant a lot. He's been in a lot of big life moments, for me in terms of, and if we're just not talking basketball, he was there when, obviously he was there when my father passed. He was there when, I got married. He was one of the people early on that I told my wife and I are expecting our first child in June. And he was one of the first people, I was able to tell him and his wife, Becky. So what he's meant to our family is something special, and you don't see that all the time in the NBA.
You're at Orlando next. Fournier got off last night. You're ready for Evan Fournier and Vucevic?
Yeah, hey, anybody that's that's in front of us next, that's who we obviously prepare for. And we have a great staff that works hard, and we'll put together a game plan and try to put our players in the best position to win.
Hey man, you're doing a great job. Thanks a lot for joining the radio show. Look forward to the next time we chat, okay?
Thanks, PA. Appreciate you guys.
See you, bud. Ryan Saunders, interim head coach of the Minnesota Timberwolves. TimberTech is constructing the 9 to noon set list, which today includes yours truly being bugged at 9:35 about too much Sean McVay mashing. Too many people are ripping Sean McVay. I'll explain at 9:35. The Techie, a national TV star from yesterday, in studio 9:55. BurkBit 10:55. And when 9 to noon continues, we chat with Brad Frost, coach of the Gophers women's hockey team, currently number 1 in the country. Nordo is the producer, and I'm Paul Allen. From the Bryan Heating and Cooling Studios, this is The Fan.
And let's get that national cash contest rolling. Every hour, a new chance for you to win $1,000 and put a grand in your hand. This hour's keyword is pizza. Text the word pizza to 200-200. One more time, that's pizza to 200-200. Text message and data rates apply.
You're listening to PA.
What a pleasure it is to be on hashtag Faith Radio with all of these believers this morning.
On The Fan.
Oh, jumping to catch up with Gophers women's hockey coach Brad Frost. 12 seasons and a four-time national champion with this program. His Gophers are top-ranked in the country for the first time since 2015. They are off this weekend, but return to Ritter Arena in a week and change for a series against the Mankato Mavericks. Gophersports.com for information, and games can be heard on 96.7 KFAN Plus. Brad, Paul Allen, how have you been?
Wonderful, PA. How about yourself?
Pretty well. Did you happen to get caught in any of that weather-related gridlock yesterday?
I did, yeah. I got to listen to Barrero for about an hour and 45 minutes, which is about an hour longer than normal.
How'd you get out of that? Feeling good about yourself?
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, feeling good.
Congrats on the ranking. What do you like about your squad this season?
Well, I think the biggest thing is our depth. It's probably the deepest team that we've ever had. We have four lines that we're able to roll. We've got six or seven defensemen, and we're playing two goalies pretty consistently and splitting those guys. And so everybody feels a part of it. Everybody's contributing, and it's we've been able to wear some teams down here throughout the year.
So, I mean, certainly not to shortchange anybody on your squad. Is it fair to say that maybe like in years past, you don't have the high-end talent you've had? But to get to that number one ranking, you talk about the depth and really good balance, right?
Yeah, definitely some great balance. You know, we still have some high-end players with Kelly Panik, who returned from the Olympics, the Potomac sisters, who were the last cuts from the Canadian Olympic team, Grace Umwinkle, Ms. Hockey, Taylor Heise, Ms. Hockey. But up and down our lineup, you know, you may not see somebody who's putting up 70, 80 points on the season. But, you know, as you look, everybody's contributing, and we still have those high-end kids that are contributing as well.
Brad, what are some things that these players do consistently you've seen in some of your previous national championship teams?
Well, I think it starts with the culture and chemistry of our team, and they're a group that really loves coming to the rink every day. They love playing for one another and being around each other. You know, we talk all the time about recruiting good people first and foremost that happen to be good hockey players, because we spend a long, many months with them on a year-to-year basis, and we want to enjoy it ourselves as coaches. So they're just a great group, but really good speed up and down the lineup. We've been getting the goaltending that we need as well to hopefully allow us to make a run here at the end.
So you practice, you play the games, you have the in-season grind to get to number one and hopefully win a national championship. But you mentioned recruiting, that you and your staff also do that at this time of the year, right?
Yeah, very much so. That actually never stops. May is basically our month that we're not allowed to recruit off campus, but aside from that, it's happening the other 11 months of the year.
So do you go to a bunch of high school hockey games or what?
Yeah, we will, you know, throughout the season. A lot of our recruiting is in the summer, because that's when I'm able to get out and travel to different places and fly to different places. Obviously, during the season, that's a little more difficult, but we certainly want to hit up Minnesota high school hockey as much as we can.
Do you, Brad, do you ever come across talented high school players you'd like to have in your program, but for whatever the reason, they want to leave the state for the experience?
Yeah, I think there are, you know, a certain few that want to get away, but for the most part, in the state of Minnesota, we're looking at those kids, and a lot of them want to come to the University of Minnesota, and that's been one of the reasons we've been so successful here over the last number of years.
Your squad is 2-2 versus Wisconsin this season. The Badgers, are they absolutely the team to beat to win a national title?
Not necessarily, but they're certainly up there. You know, us and them have been number one and two basically for the last 5 months. So, you know, they're a tremendous team. They're always our biggest rival. We're competing with them to try and win the conference championship, and so they're certainly one of the most formidable opponents out there.
Brad Frost, coach of the Gophers women's hockey team, number one in the country for the first time since 2015. Gophersports.com to learn more about the team, check out the schedule, the stats, and or get tickets. You know, during your successful career as a coach, Brad, you've coached women and men. What are some of the major differences in coaching each of them?
Yeah, I haven't coached the men a whole lot. I did coach at Bethel for a year, but you know what I find with the women is just their thirst for knowledge and their thirst to to really improve. And that's what I love about coaching women. You know, as long as they know that you care about them, they're gonna go through a wall for you. They don't feel like they know everything. They know that there's areas of growth for them, both personally and on the ice. And as a coach, that's all you want, is for them to be sponges and soak those things up, and then to go out there and execute it. And I think that's one of the things that our program has done a lot very, very well is execute the game plan and execute what we want them to do. And our players don't have the egos to prevent them from doing it.
You know, last season you guys lost 11 games, which is almost as many as you dropped the previous five seasons. How challenging was that last year?
It was challenging, but at the same time, it was one of my most fun years of coaching. We were without three national team players, and you know, and Kelly Panik and the Potomac sisters. We didn't have the depth that we normally have, but it was a team that loved being around each other. They found a way to win the WCHA final faceoff, the tournament championship, to get us into the NCAA tournament. Unfortunately, we lost in the quarterfinals, but. It was a really, really fun team and a great group of kids, and we enjoyed that year.
You know, Pronger with a ponytail is a big-time radio star at K102 these days.
She sure is. I listen to her. is she ever in the studio, or is that live, or what's? Well, yeah, but
of course
it
she
seems
is.
Like I see her partying on Twitter, but I'm listening to her on the radio, so I don't understand that.
Well, she obviously was very good on the blue line for you. Now, from a speaking standpoint, she's become very confident, very comfortable, and very good. Maybe she needs to speak to the team one day and motivate them.
We'll take her. She didn't come over for the alumni game this year. I'm not sure what was going on with that, but we'll take her at any time. She's a big star. We're proud of her.
Hey, you guys score 4.5 a game and you allow a goal and a half. What are some keys to that?
Well, that depth is probably the biggest thing, but you know, everybody on our team has the ability to score, and so we like to play up and down. We like to get after it. Our power play is number one in the country, and obviously that helps as we go forward. But we do give up chances, and because of our style of play, but we just feel like with our depth and our speed and our skill, hopefully we can score more than the other team.
A couple of quickies to close for the man they call Frosty. How is the expansion of women's hockey coming? To wit, in Michigan, there are like 7 men's teams and 0 women's teams.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer right now. You know, I think everybody's been waiting for Michigan and Michigan State to add their women's hockey programs, but I think that's just hoping at this point. It doesn't sound like they're looking into that. Northern Michigan is pretty serious about starting a women's program, and as you know, Grant Patolny out there with the men's program, but we're hopeful that Northern Michigan is going to be starting up in a couple years and hopefully be joining the WCHA.
So do you feel the expansion of the women's game is taking place, or is it at a snail-like pace?
It's more of a snail-like pace right now. There's some teams out east that are Division II that are joining, you know, kind of the ranks of Division I hockey, which is really good. But you know, North Dakota dropping their program a couple of years was a real hit to women's hockey, and hopefully some more continue to add women's hockey. But it's not happening very fast right now.
Well, you guys are getting good crowds at Ritter, right? I mean, when I watch some of these highlights, it seems like big crowds, good energy.
Yeah, very much so. It's you know, it started off slow for us, but I think having Wisconsin come to town a few weeks ago, we were selling out 3,400 there, and then having Duluth this past weekend, we had 3,000 or more at both games. So really, really exciting. It's a real cheap ticket, and it's some great hockey, so we encourage people to continue to come out.
Well, speaking of Ritter Arena, last one, Brad, and maybe it's too far out of your lane, but when I was prepping this yesterday, I was actually surprised to learn the girls' high school hockey tournament is not at Ritter Arena, and I kind of felt it should be there because it seems like a better fit so the girls can play in front of a packed house and truly feel the energy. Like what goes into that?
Well, it actually used to be at Ritter Arena about 15 years ago, and you know, the boys were over at the XL, and from what I've heard, there were some some parents that that wanted some more equity there, and so they talked to the high school league, and they ended up moving it over to the X, so that it was the same as the boys. Mm. But there's no doubt, from my standpoint, not even talking about Ritter Arena, but just for these girls and boys, anytime you can play in front of a packed house, whether right. it's 1,500 or 3,000 or 18,000, man, the atmosphere is electric. And so Ritter Arena is a great place to play, and we love when those big crowds are there.
Well, this, I'm not trying to put you in a weird spot, but looking at it from afar, this seems ridiculous. I mean, if you're going to get 2,000, 3,000, or 4,000 people at XL Energy Center to watch the girls' state high school tournament, it's cavernous, and it's not going to be super loud compared to Ritter, where if you get 2,000, 3,000, or 4,000, you know, then I would think about the players first and the atmosphere and energy and experience they could get from playing, you know, in front of a packed house.
Well, there's no doubt playing in front of a packed house is cool. I think for the young girls that are playing at the X, it's pretty cool to play where the Wild play, you know. So I think there's positives to both. Obviously, the amenities at the X are different and probably better than at Ritter in regards to locker rooms and things like that. But
yeah,
you know, as you mentioned, it's the way it is for now, and I assume it will continue. And you know, these girls deserve to get the best as well.
My man, enjoy the off week. Congratulations on the success, with obviously a lot of work to do. And best of luck down the road. And we'll chat again soon. Okay.
Yeah, I can't wait. Thank you.
Brad Frost, coach of the Golden Gophers women's hockey team, currently number one in the country. How that you know, when prepping 9 to noon, and you have a guest like Brad Frost, somebody we will not have frequently, but maybe 2 or 3 times a year. I really enjoy the research angle of that because it's outside of my comfort zone. So instead of rhapsodizing or glorifying a lot of the players and stuff like that, I like to talk more globally with like, you know, hey, 4.5 goals a game, you give up a goal and a half. You know, you have some very good players, but clearly you got balance and depth and stuff like that. What goes into being number one? But when I was putting this together yesterday, and this is Fairness and Stupidity Act, FISA. Okay, I didn't know the girls' high school hockey tournament was at the X. I assumed it was at Ritter Arena. And when I learned it was at the X, and with all due respect to the girls playing in the games,
yeah,
you know, where with the state high school hockey tournament, you know, we watch it on the Fridays and the Saturdays, and you got packed houses.
And you're going to need to know where to go to watch Holy Family once the gals are in the tournament.
Well, you got packed houses for the boys. Now, for the girls, you're getting 2,000, 3,000, and 4,000 people, even for championship games. So then, like, when I'm putting this together and I learned it was at the X, I was like, this. I mean, with all due respect, and I'm equal opportunity guy, hey, if they want the experience of playing where the Wild play, being in those pro locker rooms, okay, that's cool. If that truly is what trumps everything, okay, but are we really seeing the forest for the trees here? Because, like, for the girls' high school hockey tournament, were it at Ritter Arena, and you get 2,500, 3,500 people.
It's packed.
Sucker's packed. It's loud. It has vibrancy. If I had a daughter playing in the state high school hockey tournament, I 100 out of 100 times would want it at Ritter Arena for okay. that experience. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. Now, you know, for instance, the state football tournament. Okay, I mean, and there's probably more people that went to watch EP and YZ than there would be to watch girls hockey.
Yeah.
But they're not filling up US Bank Stadium.
Right.
They didn't fill up TCF. It's still part of the vibe and the experience of playing where the best of the best play.
I understand that, but you're also looking at a game in November/December where it's dicey putting it in, like what would the other options be? It would be somewhere outside at a smaller venue.
Well, they did it. They did it at TCF.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, but that's still, what, 40,000, 35,000, 40,000, 45,000, 50,000 people.
And that's my point. And 10 or 15,000 were there. If yeah. they were going to do it at TCF, they might as well have done it at a spot where it held 10,000.
Yeah.
And it would be absolutely packed to the brim.
Yeah, maybe I'm
kids
in the minority
and parents
here.
Lining. Well, I mean, ultimately,
if I'm thinking about it from a girl's experience standpoint of playing in front of a packed house.
Well, I can't speak for the girls,
you know what I mean?
But as a boy playing high school sports, the concept of getting the opportunity to play and come out of that dressing room where the big people, you know, where people that you idolize, whether you're a male or a female,
right.
Girls hockey players probably watch or catch more NHL games or Wild games than maybe they do, you know, on the women's side of things. I mean, I think that would be an unbelievable experience.
If that is what goes into the decision, because Brad mentioned, you know, that it was at Ritter for 15 years. Then he mentioned, I think, you know, and certainly don't want to misquote him here, that some parents, you know, brought something up about the girls playing at the X.
Yeah.
So is this, and this is probably a deeply rooted beyond the pond talker, is it the parents wanting their girls playing at the X or the girls wanting the opportunity to play at the X?
Yeah, that's outside of my lines,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, me too, and I'm completely guessing and speculating
here.
That's
more of a Micheletti and Faldis related segment.
I'm simply saying, if I had a daughter that played high school hockey, and they advanced to the state tournament and were playing in a championship game, I would prefer it at Ritter Arena.
For the vibe.
So they truly get the packed house vibe, as opposed to, hey, that's Jason Zucker's locker, let's go out and play in an arena that is 20% full. You know, I guess I can see both sides of it. 9 to noon, back after this.
Hey, check this out. This is sweet. Save the date for the inaugural Mike Zimmer Golf Classic. It's happening May 13th, and it's at Bear Path Golf and Country Club. Former and current Vikings, as well as local celebrities. Ooh, they're going to team up with partners and sponsors for a day of golf. Fun and prizes with hole-in-one, longest drive, and closest to the pin contest. All proceeds will benefit the Mike Zimmer Foundation outreach programs. More info, KFAN.com community.
You know, whether it is stuff I read or nationally related football shows or stuff I see involving the NFL, it during the course of the last week, and it's not super over the top, but it's more than taking one email or one tweet and making a meal out of a morsel. It definitely has been en vogue for some people, for whatever the reason, to rip Rams coach Sean McVay because his team didn't score a touchdown in the Super Bowl. And, you know, my question would be, is why are some people either, I don't want to say getting over the top, but really going out of their way to get after Sean McVay, a man who conceded after the Super Bowl, he got outcoached.
I'm pretty numb right now, but definitely I got outcoached, and I didn't do nearly good enough for a football team. You know, the thing that's so tough about all of this is that, you know, the finality to it. You know, usually when you get a chance, if you go through some adversity, you can bounce back right away. This one's going to stick with you and just stings in your gut. And like I said, I'm still kind of numb right now, but I have so much love for these players and these coaches, and that's where, you know, it eats at you because you feel like you didn't do your part to help them.
Okay, he did get outcoached and he lost. Now, from an outcoaching standpoint, not to go over every single play in the game, but if his quarterback puts one of two passes to Brandon Cooks on a rope and they get a touchdown, it could be a completely different outcome. And he's not talking like that after the game. And it's not like the Super Bowl worked the way of an absolute blowout ass-whooping. So, you know, it appears from afar like McVay definitely is one of those team-first guys who will lay on the proverbial sword to deflect attention from his quarterback, his other coaches, and those on the team. So right after the game, he conceded, I got outcoached, by the way, by Bill Belichick. Now, when it comes to things I've read, heard, or seen, personal opinion, I'd be very careful when going down that road with Sean McVay. And with McVay, do people go over the top with McVay-related vitriol? Because up to the game, he was described as a boy genius, wunderkind. He you know, 33-year-old Sean McVay, boy genius of coaching, revolutionizing and reinventing the game, certainly of offense. 33 years of age, good looking, perfectly manicured beard, born leader, beautiful girlfriend on his arm, a star in a land of the biggest stars. Are those some of the reasons people find it en vogue to get a little over the top with the criticism of Sean McVay? Personally, I think it's foolish to tear down this man. He's very good at what he does, and he's becoming better not only season by season, month by month, week by week, and game by game. Now, I'm sure the written or spoken negativity does not get to Sean McVay. He does not seem like a thin-skinned individual. Definitely, viewing him from afar, and I've never met him, but I know people who either work with him or know him, definitely is a big-picture individual. So I would guess the written or spoken negativity phases him absolutely zero. He also seems like the kind who will grow and improve off what happened in Atlanta. His offense was a Pinto at Mercedes-Benz. I'm guessing that will drive him to never let it happen again. Sean McVay has coached 2 years and made the playoffs both times, and he got his team to the Super Bowl in year two. So you run into Belichick, probably the greatest and most accomplished coach in the history of the NFL. You run into Brady. It's your first Super Bowl. It's the first Super Bowl for your quarterback and a lot of players on your team, and you flopped. So does that mean, whether it's written, spoken, or whatever, that it's fair to forget everything that went into the first year, which led to a playoff berth, then a division championship, then an off week, then a couple of postseason wins, and a flop in the Super Bowl? I just think, for some reason, maybe because of his age and the persona or the perception some people have of him as the, quote, boy genius, end quote, I just think people have found a spot where somebody highly touted, clearly very successful, and getting more successful by the day, failed. He and his team failed. So people think it's en vogue to take shots. They played fantasy football this offseason with Sue, Tlaib, Peters, Fowler, and Cooks. So looking at that from afar, you may be like, all right, you had all those really good players, but there are a lot of teams in the NFL who have a lot of really good players, and they don't get where he got. You know, because the managing of the egos, the managing of the talent, the manipulating of the roster, and just handling everything that goes into truly being a successful head coach. And he is a successful head coach. 2 years in the NFL, two playoff berths, second year gets to the Super Bowl. There, you can look at it from afar and say you played fantasy football, you had the best players, thus you should have gotten to the Super Bowl. But in my opinion, there's more that goes into it from a management standpoint than just having the best players. Bill Belichick texts Sean McVay praising the way he does things. So that's the greatest in the history of the game, texting this individual during the season, voicing admiration with the way he does things. Super Bowl 53 is going to eat at this man. Even if they can't afford to keep all of the high-enders, Sean McVay, to me, definitely seems like the kind that will always get the most out of what he has. For instance, Super Bowl 53 eating at him. The Vikings beat McVay and the Rams in 2017. Rams marched down the field, unbelievably impressively, at U.S. Bank Stadium, closed it with a Todd Gurley touchdown. Whole thing took 4 minutes and big change. Scored a touchdown on the first drive and didn't get a single point the final 55 minutes of the game. Somebody I know who's very close to the Rams put it to me this way after the Rams beat the Vikings on Thursday Night Football 38-31. That 2017 loss to the Vikings chewed McVay up because his offense was embarrassed for 55 minutes of the game. Didn't have to say it publicly. Didn't have to go to Sam Farmer at the LA Times and plant some type of quote, you know, so it's on anybody's radar, but it happened. His offense was embarrassed by a team that would go to the NFC title game for 55 minutes of a 2017 game, and it chewed him up until they got the opportunity to play again. When he saw the Vikings on the schedule in 2018, Sean McVay circled that date with blood. He was hell-bent to not let 2017 happen again. That night, sadly, we're on the wrong side of it. They had 556 yards of offense. His quarterback threw for 5 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. And then there's Jared Goff. You know, when you talk about this man's equity, where he's going, and whether it's right off an absolute flop in the Super Bowl to get after him with vitriol and angst and take cheap shots, as much as I've heard and or I've read. Jared Goff was on the fast track to potential bust until McVay arrived. Despite the Super Bowl performance, he legitimately is becoming one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. So when it comes to this guy, you can rip him all you want. Super Bowl was a complete disaster for his offense. I'd be careful, because he's on the fast track to something good.
You're listening to PA.
So I see Paul, and of course, sure. You know, my heart melts, and everything, every other part of me melts.
Right.
On the Fan.
As 9 to noon has stated for many, many years, all the way back to 10 to 1 just for fun, PA and Dubé days, then yours truly taking over the show full time at some point in 2008, 2009, up to where we are now, year of your Lord, 2019. You don't have to be a star to be in our show. Copyright Billy Davis Jr. and Marilyn McCoo from back in the day. But if you are a star, specifically a national television star on MLB Network.
Yeah.
We always will take you in and on our show. Aaron Gleiman, the editor in chief of Glitzy Baseball Prospectus at Baseball Pro and baseballprospectus.com.
Yeah.
We have secured the services of a man we call the Twins Techie, the Timberwolves Techie. He's the Techie. He's in studio right now, a day after being a national television star on MLB Network. How was the appearance? And thanks for taking time to join us.
Well, I got to tell you.
Come on! Woo!
Unfortunately, PA, now that I'm a television star, this is going to be my last radio appearance.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were going to start asking iHeartMedia for money for these.
Well, that,
because that'll take me about 7 years to get you a dollar.
That seems... even less odds of me becoming a TV star. Yeah, they put me on TV for like 7 minutes. It was all right.
7 minutes on TV is a long time.
Yeah, 7 minutes in heaven, PA.
Right.
It's really, the reviews are in, and the reviews include you need wireless headphones.
Okay.
Because I had a big cord of my headphone across my shirt.
And it was draped down your breast, which you probably should have flipped it over.
Yeah, I didn't have the length to do it.
Really?
Yeah, it was a whole big thing. We were setting up with the producer, and he was like...
factory earbuds?
Yeah. So if there's like a Target Best Buy sponsorship type deal out there, give me some, some earpods.
Well, yeah, one appearance every 10 years.
It'd be worth it.
That would justify the comp.
Yeah, why not?
For sure, one mention every 10 years.
Yeah.
So the MLB Network appearance yesterday.
Yeah.
people can go to @AaronGleiman and his Twitter feed. Then you can gravy train the Baseball Prospectus feed.
Yeah.
Is it on the show page?
We have it on the 9 to noon show page at KFAN.com.
It's also on my show page, the Paul Allen show page at KFAN.com.
Well, that's
nice. If you want to watch the Techies MLB Network appearance from yesterday, this is not like super old. This was yesterday. Overall, how do you think it went?
I mean, it was fine. I would prefer not to have my face, personally, if I could borrow someone else's face to go on television.
What
I think
mean?
That would be good. But other than that, it was all right.
Where was the kimono?
I should have.
I mean, you really could have popularized the bit.
Yeah, I also,
with the kimono and the Cinnabon.
The other thing is, like, we have a cat at our apartment, mm-hmm. and my big worry was, remember that when the guy went on the BBC? Like, I don't know if he was a political reporter or whatever. And he
jumped in the room.
And the kid started. So I envisioned that happening with our stupid cat, who is insane and also screams all day.
Okay.
And so I thought, well,
maybe you should stop torturing the feline and he or she wouldn't scream.
But my thinking was like.
What about the bar cart in the background, by the way?
So here's what happened with that. Here's what happened with that. So I'm not a. I don't know anything about technology. I'm the world. The oldest 36-year-old. But we used FaceTime to do it, which is why I had the headphones on and all
that.
So I'm setting it up, and it gives you like a...
Well, how come when I FaceTime you, you never take them?
Well, you're not on TV, PA.
Okay.
Because I'm afraid to pick up, because if you FaceTime me at like 10 p.m., I'm imagining you in like a whirlpool somewhere.
You always push me to unavailable.
Yeah, well, you know, I got TV stars trying to...
I got you.
Me out this point. But it was a very narrow view that I was getting on when I was setting up FaceTime. And then as soon as I clicked answer on their call, it spread out to the widescreen.
Brilliant.
So my little background of the bookcase that I had set up, all of a sudden now it's showing the bar cart and our dumb fake plant that we have. And you can see like into the pantry of our kitchen. And
sweet.
I'm like, oh, this is, I think I'm reviewing myself not to be very professional here.
Did you guys put time into cleaning your apartment before the TV hit?
She did.
I mean,
she's cleaning areas of the apartment that are like 180 degrees away from the camera that is facing. Like she's cleaning like three rooms away. Like, well, you know, they can probably sense some level of dust in the bedroom. So let me just try to get this.
Well,
I did not.
That was very kind of her.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how much you watch like NFL Network and MLB Network or whatever, but like when they do hits like that, whether it's .com, Tom Pelissero, Ian Rappaport, Adam Schefter, Aaron Gleeman,
all the greats,
people like that. They always feel compelled to have a bookshelf behind them.
Yeah. Well, that was my thinking because I thought
which you did, but the thing is like if you look closely, if you look closely at yours, you see a couple of copies of Baseball Prospectus and a very, very large collection of the magazine Swank.
Yeah,
I always love that.
I wanted to be—I didn't want to put forth a picture of my life that was not accurate, and so it's got the subscription of Hustler on one side.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, you are right that
a frame photo of Bob Guccione
when they were like, you know, because I work from home. I don't have some great office skyline that I can put out there as the background. So I thought, I had the exact thought that you just said, which is, I've watched 1,000 writers do these on those networks that you just mentioned.
Yeah.
And they're always in front of a stupid bookcase with like 8 books and a bobblehead behind them.
You didn't take advantage of the opportunity to put Big 50 on national TV.
Well, yeah.
Because that was the smart play.
Brilliant.
So I said,
20 overstock copies of your own book right behind you.
I said to Becky, why don't we just change up the bookcase? Because my big fat head was blocking half
Who's
of it.
Becky?
Beloved BJ, excuse
Thank
me.
You.
I said to her, let's set it up so that like on one side is the full cover of the BP annual.
Right.
That's out basically now. You can get it on Amazon.
Thank you.
And then
can.
On the other side is the full cover of my book, which has been on Amazon. And she said, that's the corniest thing I've ever heard.
Come on, BJ.
You can stack some books, but you can't like display the cover behind you. It's
you
not
are an author, and that's your book.
That's
of course, you should have popularized it on MLB Network.
Maybe next time. Although I don't think there's going to be a next time.
This is MLB Network. It's not Victory Sports. Okay, it's not
RIP.
It's not MSC or whatever it is. Yeah. This is MLB Network with Fran Charles. This is an opportunity for those. Let's put it this way. If you're watching MLB Network in early February, you're probably a pretty big baseball fan.
In the middle of the day, too, by the way.
It just took one person to see the Big 50 and then buy it and read it, specifically the chapter on Nishioka, and then tell 5 people, and they tell 5. Now we got the pyramid going, and all of a sudden you've moved 1,000 pieces of product.
Yeah, I've made $40 to $50 extra on that book. But yeah, it was... Here's what I learned about television. There's a lot more setup involved than radio.
Yes.
You have to wear a shirt. You have to take a shower.
Yes.
You have to do all these things, which I'm not particularly good at. And I also learned, like, there's a weird nervousness because you have to worry about what you look like, whereas I just stroll in here, as you can clearly see. I don't care what I look like when you do radio. And that's the beauty of it. You can stroll in here wearing sweatpants and flip-flops. You could be wearing a suit. Nobody knows.
Ain't no
it's
doubt.
All theater of the mind. That's Ain't the no beauty doubt. Of it. So, yeah, I really yeah. learned radio is probably,
but
probably
with,
for me.
With TV, the most difficult thing for me to handle with the TV work I do, whether it's Vikings game plan, right. Vikings Live on Thursday nights.
A decent amount, actually.
Well, during the football season, yeah. I will be part of three TV shows during the week. Is the bit that goes in your ear, in the business they call it an IFB.
Yeah.
It's either when you're talking and they're counting you down
right.
to a break, or they say something while you're talking. So that for me, that's the most difficult part. However, I'm not an elite Seth Kaplan mind, but like for people, the producers who are on the other side of the IFB, they also know it's difficult for quote talent end quote
right.
to not go staccato when somebody's talking in their ear.
Right, because it distracts.
So they do it quickly. So right. like they've been to handling school with that too. I mean, that inner workings of television, very controversial.
Yeah, they counted me down. But then after that, Fran Charles basically ran the thing. It was, they figured I couldn't screw that much up in 7 minutes. But
were you nervous?
I wasn't nervous. Like, I'm never nervous to answer questions about baseball. Because my feeling is,
right.
if I can't do that, what can I do? Like, they could have asked me any question, and I would have given them, I think, at least a decent answer about baseball. Mm-hmm. I was just nervous about, like, how does my stupid bookcase look behind me? Can you see the bar cart to the right? How silly does it look to not have wireless headphones? All that sort of stuff, because that's not what I do. What I do is...
You're a blogger.
Right. I'm a writer and a talker.
Fran Charles is lucky you didn't roll in there with your kimono.
I should have done that, actually. That's not... If they invite me back on, I will get some Cinnabon and put it in the background. Big box of Cinnabon up top on the bookcase, and then maybe a nice twins-colored kimono.
So for those who missed our guy... AG, Aaron Gleeman, AaronGleeman.com.
I can't believe how excited you are about this.
The techie.
It's really funny to me.
For those of you who missed it, you can watch back the 7-minute interview and subsequently 3 minutes of analysis of what AG was talking about from those in studio at MLB Network, I believe in Secaucus, New Jersey.
Yeah, that's right.
At KFAN.com via my show page. It's up there right now, KFAN.com, Paul Allen show page. For those who did miss it, what did you discuss?
Bryce Harper and Manny Machado are the big topics because they're still unsigned and there's all kinds of rumors about 10-year deals. So I wrote an article last week using Baseball Prospectus' projection system, basically trying to look ahead 10 full years and projecting, you know, they're 26 now, how will they look when they're 35 and how scared should teams be to give them an 8 or a 9 or even a 10-year deal? And so we talked about that. How do they look 10 years out? Who do they project like in terms of similar players? All kinds of nerdy stuff, which I don't quite think the MLB Network guys were prepped for. But yeah, it was interesting.
That the Bryce Harper, Manny Machado stuff, AG, that was next level. That was next level, main man. I mean, you got former player Carlos Pena, some old school writer in the middle I couldn't recognize, and Fran Charles, who I've known since he worked at NFL Network.
Yep.
Heads were spinning. Your stuff was so next level.
I think that was a case of the producer of the show reading the article, because producers are more likely to be stat-heady, a little nerdier. And I say that in a good way. That's
Carlos Pena was like, no tengo tiempo para AG.
Yeah, but he made a couple good
he
points.
Was, he was bitter with you.
Yeah, well, you know.
You didn't give Machado enough credit about his ability to show more discipline at the plate, and he's only 26, which is exactly what you said when you were talking to them.
Yeah. I will say, like, Fran Charles definitely did the heavy lifting. And I've known, like, I've seen Fran Charles used to pop up doing basketball games when I was a kid. Like, he's been around. And so, yeah, it was interesting to see him.
So, and they talked about it after. Well, they did. They referenced Super Special Pacoda.
Yeah, that's our projection system at BP, which, by the way, tomorrow... Thursday a.m., 6 a.m. tomorrow morning is Pacoda Day.
Whoa.
Which means if you go to baseballperspectives.com, all of our projections, including the 10-year ones that I was talking about on MLB Network, all the team projections, if you want to know what do we think the Twins' record's going to be, all that stuff, all launches at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning.
So what, again, is Super Special Pacoda?
It is basically a projection system. So it tells you on an individual level, what is Byron Buxton going to hit this year? Mm-hmm. It tells you on a team level, what's the Twins' record going to be this year? And then on a big picture, it tells you what the projected standings are, what the playoff odds are. It's basically our big supercomputer, big brain, trying to predict the whole season before it even starts, which is obviously can get kind of messy, but it's probably the most popular day on the site every year.
Great. BaseballProspectus.com?
Yep, 6 a.m. Tomorrow, Thursday morning.
Sweet. So in closing for this segment, What exactly right now is Andrew Wiggins Pacoda?
Negative 50.
What? Negative 5-0?
I feel not. We've been certainly the anti-Andrew Wiggins fan club. I mean, we're not alone there for years now. I feel like every week we come in here and we go, how much longer? How much longer? But I feel like it might. It's reaching sort of a decision point. And I read the Johnny Athletic article saying that a couple teams are calling them, which...
What?
Yeah.
And...
He said six, but here's the problem.
And...
You're not going to get a value-based return. You're going to get another undesirable player slash contract.
And...
Because you have to match salaries. But yeah, I'm reaching that point as well, which is how many more months and how many more years can you treat every decent game by Wiggins as if it's a breakthrough when ultimately there has never been a breakthrough? And now he's at the point these last few games where the team's playing terribly, and it's like he's just doing a walkthrough. It's like he's going 60% speed.
I wouldn't exactly say the team's playing terribly.
I mean, they just dropped one of the ugliest games I've ever seen to a Memphis team that was playing about nine guys.
Yeah, they played pretty well in that Denver game and most of the Utah games.
Right. They've had too many games.
Well, we're going to get into that next segment.
Okay.
Because it may be slightly unfair to blanket analyze this team.
Sure.
Sans Teague, Rose, Jones, and Kovlov. The techie, MLB Network TV star in studio. His name is Aaron Gleiman. His website is aarongleiman.com. More with AG around the corner, but first, Grandin, your hand time.
National Cash Contest. I hope somebody out there wins $1,000 like Bob in Blaine did yesterday. Just for listening to The Fan every hour, new keyword, new shot at putting a grand in your hand. This hour's keyword is run. Text the word run, simply enough. Run to 200-200. That's run to 200-200. Chance to put a grand in your hand. Text message and data rates apply.
You're listening to PA.
I think a good lesson to be learned from this is control your emotions immediately after the game and go back and look at the tape, okay, before you jump to conclusion.
On the Fan.
7 seconds.
To call that foul after what this game has been through with 0.1 seconds to go, to not let this game go into overtime.
Fox Sports North for the highlight. Welcome back, 10:20, 9 to noon, Techie in studio. Ryan Saunders joined 9 to noon right out of the gate. That's either podcastable now or you can listen back to it later, KFAN.com. And Ryan was consistent 9 to noon today the way he was last night with his post-game interview from Memphis, where the way I phrased it to him, because I've watched it back a few times, is I felt Josh Okogie grabbed Justin Holiday's arm. So from a textbook standpoint, yes, I believe he fouled him. Now, when two are colliding and diving the way they were at that stage of the game, very difficult for me to blow the whistle on that play in that rapid-fire type situation. Ryan was consistent, and I agree with him, where he's like, I'm not going to comment on that, but there were 8 million things that could have transpired during the course of the game where we should have won the game.
Yes.
So these bloodbaths they're having with Memphis, JB v. Ryan, a couple of former fellow Golden Gopher basketball cagers battling each other during the course of 1 week. When they were here, we were kicking the bleep out of them. They came running at us. We win in overtime. Last night, they're kicking the bleep out of us. We come running at them, and they win in dicey fashion at the wire. I'm not going to say they were the most entertaining games ever. The one here, I thought, was a disaster.
They were pretty bad.
But nevertheless, JB and Ryan, 1-1 in the last week.
My theory is that the refs just didn't want to watch 5 more minutes of that. They were like, let's just go home. Nobody cares about this game, either of these teams. Nobody really wants to take this. I mean,
beauty's in the eye of the beholder, AG, because the performance provided by Cat and Mike Conley's performance last night were spectacular. Conley was unstoppable last night.
There is a certain, I mean, Memphis has been playing the same style through multi different coaches back, to Zach Randolph. And they're trying to grind it out, obviously. Yeah. And so it's not going to be as aesthetically pleasing.
Well, they didn't last night, though.
No.
I mean, Gasol's out, and they absolutely picked up the tempo from the way they normally play.
True. I just think I think what Saunders was saying to you earlier is probably like, that's a game we should win.
Yeah.
we shouldn't be worrying about whether a whistle is called. It should be meaningless. We should be up 10 points at the end. And that's the, you know, we were talking last segment about they've had some good games and some good wins under Saunders. Mm-hmm. But whether it's Thibodeau or Saunders, the whole season, there's been so many games that they just drop that they have no business dropping. And you win three or four of those games that you should, you know, the Phoenix one. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you're in the eighth or seventh spot instead of two games back, and I think it completely changes anything.
Well, they're four back.
Of the eighth spot?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I mean, I didn't look at updated. But
they're four back.
The problem they're going to run into, I think, for the eighth spot is that assuming LeBron doesn't get hurt again, the Lakers are going to make the playoffs.
We'll see about that. We'll see what happens.
They just got crushed by Indiana.
They lost by 42 at Indiana last night. Pacers traveled home from New Orleans.
Right.
So probably got back 132-230.
Without Oladipo.
And no Oladipo. Right. And Indy had been playing ratty basketball until the last week. Now Bogdanovic, Collison, Turner, Thaddeus Young, Domantas Sabonis. It's starting to click. Indy's not bad.
Right.
But the distraction factor has to be overwhelming the Lakers right now.
Half the roster,
right?
More than half the roster, literally is looking at their phone probably before and after the game to see if they've been traded.
Yes,
checking out the Woj bombs. Like, literally, they're looking to trade six or seven guys.
Yeah,
that's half the rotation at best. So,
Lake shows no bargain right now.
Right, but I still think ultimately they're not going to be a below 500 team if LeBron plays the majority of the games. He could get hurt again, and all bets are off. And then the other thing is obviously the Kings, which I just watched the other night. I mean, I think they're legit. I don't think they're going to, you know, make a run to the finals, but I don't think they're going to.
No, they're legit.
They're not going to fade away down the stretch.
Well, the Clippers just traded their best player.
Right. They're
Tobias Harris goes to Philly.
They're knocking themselves out of it. Obviously, Memphis has played themselves out of it, and now they're looking to trade their guys. Anyway,
New Orleans is dead.
I do. Yeah, New Orleans, same thing. I do think it's, you know, Kings, Lakers, Wolves.
Yes.
And, you know, when there's only two, three teams in the mix, there's no reason the Wolves can't make a run. But the alternative to that is, well, you get in the eighth spot, you get swept by the Warriors or whatever. It's nice to make the playoffs, particularly after all the craziness that's gone on with this team.
Yeah.
It would be great to say, look, we made the playoffs without Thibodeau, with a rookie coach, all that stuff. On the other hand, if it keeps you from shopping Jeff Teague or Derrick Rose or guys who are likely not going to be part of the long-term future but could bring back some more assets to build around.
I don't think they can trade, AG. I mean, there can be Johnny Athletic rumors about teams inquiring about Wiggins. Okay, cool. I mean, I don't care what I have to give you. I'm not taking that contract for that amount of time with that player.
Yeah.
So I think it's basically impossible to trade Andrew Wiggins.
Well, I mean, they're
and Rose is hurt, and Rose and Teague and Jones are tradable assets.
Sure.
But they're all hurt, the deadline's tomorrow.
If you were you can be traded while you're hurt. You have to convince a team that the guy's going to. But if you're a contender out there, and you look at Derrick Rose.
I want him.
He's not going to be on the Wolves next year because he's going to get a bigger contract than they can afford, and he's played great when he's been healthy.
Agreed.
If you can add him as a sixth man, even, if you're a legit contending team, and his salary is low enough that you wouldn't have to send a great deal back to match salaries. Mm-hmm. You could send a protected first-round pick, for instance.
If I'm Indy, I trade for Derrick Rose.
Yeah, I mean, he slides right into the playmaking Oladipo. I mean, I think there's a handful of teams.
Yeah.
And the Wolves have to decide. Because if you trade Rose, you're basically saying, you know, maybe we can get the A spot if everybody gets healthy. But we're not putting our best foot forward to make the A spot.
I agree.
And I think that's the tricky thing that you have to balance is what are the odds we're going to make the playoffs?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're probably relatively low. And what is the advantage to actually making the playoffs? It's a short-term little excitement, but it's not huge. Versus we get a lottery pick if we don't. You could trade Rose maybe for a protected first-round pick. Who knows? Maybe you can try to package Teague and maybe unload Gorgie's deal, some kind of something that you could do.
I like your approach.
Because otherwise, if you don't do that, you probably finish 9th or 10th. You go into the offseason, Rose walks for nothing. You look at the same roster coming back with probably a pick in the late teens. And I think you've missed an opportunity to maybe add one or two more rotational pieces. And it's not like they're in a situation where they can't use the help. Now, the Wiggins thing is completely separate from all that.
But we had a new Andrew Wiggins reference point last night.
Yeah.
I mean, there have just been, whether it's the perception of being lazy, the perception of not caring because he's quiet and, you know, lacks intensity and things that are tangible that people can see and reach out and grab.
Right.
There's been all that, and there is all that. The Atlanta game, we lose at home. functioning, clankability at the line late in the game. You know, definitely played into the team losing. How about last night? Did you watch the entire game?
Yeah, I mean, three-fourths of it, yes.
You see what happened right in front of halftime? When he, right in front of halftime, he throws the ball right to Mike Conley.
Yeah.
Conley hits a shot. And I'm like, what in the hell was that?
Maybe shaving points.
That was like one of the laziest things I've seen from Andrew Wiggins during a career that has provided a fair amount of laziness.
Yeah.
That was horrible.
There's so much. Like
I can't even have him as the inbound. I can't. And I'm not trying to second guess my guy. I want Ryan to become the full-time head coach of this team with Seastein and give him a full run. And quite honestly, I think it's going to happen. But there have to be better options than Andrew freaking Wiggins inbounding the ball in front of halftime.
But the difficult, I don't disagree with that, but the difficult thing you run into when the guy's making $30 million a year and he's signed for 4 or 5 years is you can start to say, oh, there's a better option to guard this guy. There's a better option to be your crunch time ball handler. There's a better option to be your inbound. Well, what is he the best option for at this point? I think you're running out of things that you can point to that he even does well.
Yeah.
Like he's shooting horribly. He's never
making
been a great
Cat
shooter.
Smarter. You know why he's making Cat smarter? Because Cat knows at the ends of close games, Wiggins is going to take the final shot.
Yeah.
So he has to be smart where to get the rebound.
Yeah.
You know, the trajectory of the shot. Cat's like, okay, I know he's going to miss it. So I got to figure out which way he's going to miss it so I can get the rebound and either tie or win the game.
Yeah, Cat turns into like Dennis Rodman, just like sourcing rebounds.
Yes!
It's sad, but like,
he's the worm.
That's true.
Cat's the worm.
But like, what does, like, Wiggins is not a good shooter. He's not a good ball handler. He's not really a playmaker. He's not a guy who's going to shut anybody down defensively.
Right.
He's not a full-out max effort guy, which like a Kogi has all kinds of flaws, but he'll be diving on the floor maybe a little too much, as we saw at the end of the game.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything you can point to at Wiggins now 4 or 5 years into this thing where you can go, A, he's improved significantly.
It's his identity.
Or B, what is even the standout skill? And it's always, well, he's got so much athleticism and natural ability, but at what point do you
that's
go,
tired.
What does that get? Like, what is the actual functionality of that supposed athleticism and natural ability?
Yeah.
He can't shoot. He takes the worst shots ever. He dribbles the ball for 15 seconds to take a fadeaway from the free throw line every time. I'm just, now look, nobody is as, like, the stock on him is as low as it's going to be because everybody's frustrated. He's not that bad. He's a functional NBA player. But I do think they're getting to a point, just as an overall big picture of the Wolves franchise, when you have to say, if this guy's not going to step up, we have to figure out whether it's swapping him for another bad contract that may be a little bit shorter, swapping him for something, and we toss in a first-round pick to make it easier for the team to absorb his deal. Because it's not happening. He's not going to be the second-best player on a very good team.
Aaron, he is one of the most frustrating players ever to wear these colors.
Yeah, and they've had quite a few.
Like, Ricky Davis was very frustrating to me. Ricky was a supremely talented offensive player.
Yep.
Defense, I think it was Corey Cove who coined it. It was a brilliant line. He would call him Ricky Avis because there's no D in Davis.
I always love that one.
Yeah, and it was brilliant.
Yeah.
And he's right. But Ricky was mercurial that way. And, you know, Ricky had a different personality than Andrew. He was more, there was more vibrancy to it.
Right.
And he was more open and just more engaged. And, you know, so like when you think of more than a handful of some incredibly frustrating Timberwolves players over my 20 years of doing this radio show, first two that come to mind for me, Ricky Davis and Andrew Wiggins.
How about Isaiah Junior J.R. Ryder, too, which is another supremely talented offensive player.
That was right when I got here.
Okay, that was my early Wolves fandom, and he was my favorite player to the point I would do his free throw routine at the Jewish Community Center when I was shooting free throws.
Brilliant.
And he's a guy who could go get you 40 in a night.
And you would miss, and Zach Naren knew you were going to miss, so he'd jump in the right spot.
Zach Naren and Doogie Wilson were in the mix. It was a real tough league, I would say. But that's...
I'm open.
You look at Wiggins, not bad shooter, Doogie Wilson. You wouldn't think it looking at him. But,
yeah. Don't judge a book by the cover.
But, the Wiggins thing is, I think they have... I love Covington, and I think the point you raised about them not being healthy, it's very difficult to even assess their chances of doing anything when they're not healthy.
Well, that's why I respect what Ryan's getting out of this squad right now.
I agree. I mean, to just be fighting and winning some games is decent because they're down to basically like 70% of their rotation, including some key guys, especially ball handlers and stuff. But
Covington's the second best player on the team.
Oh, I mean, you don't have to convince me of that. I would put Wiggins like fourth or fifth at best at this point.
Well, yeah, he's behind Rose.
I just wonder, does it come to a point when whatever fear you have of trading away a 24-year-old and watching him blossom into a star somewhere else, you just have to at some point go, it's not happening here no matter what.
Right.
And the whole thing was supposed to be, oh, he loves Ryan Saunders. They're like the best of friends. You know, he's sick of getting yelled at by Thibodeau, which I could actually obviously see that. But he's been worse under Ryan Saunders, especially post the 40-point explosion in the first game.
It started great, which makes it more frustrating. Right.
And now he's shooting 31%. He's back to taking horrible shots. He can't make his threes anymore. And the effort thing to me is the craziest. And I don't even think he's like lazy. And I don't mind that he's not emotional on the court. I have no problem with that. I think that's overblown. Yeah. It's very easy to be a guy who shouts and yells and throws stuff and just convince people that you care. I'm not even saying that. I just
But he never talks.
Right, well, but I think
he never talks.
The bigger thing is whether it was the play against Denver where they did the Hail Mary pass and no one was paying attention, or the play you just mentioned right before. There are so many plays where he's almost like a robot that's powered down for that play, and there's just no reaction to anything. And I think more than going all out, which he struggles with enough, there are so many plays or moments in each game where he just sort of short circuits and it costs them points. And he's not good enough at everything else to be making mistakes in so many other areas.
The Techie.
Your work on television yesterday?
Gleeman.
Absolutely superb. I'm glad you got the opportunity. It was well deserved. And despite your ever emerging and rapidly emerging national television status, 9 to noon still looks at you as a gentleman, a scholar, and an observer of quality Manischewitz.
Thank you, PA. Radio for life.
See and for that, week. We love you.
You're listening to PA.
Get some beers, get some whatever, and start celebrating.
On the Fan. Check it out.
The day has arrived. It is my weekly fantasy basketball contest at fanball.com. It's called the Posterizer. 9 to noon, we'll have several teams in the Posterizer this evening. You can play against yours truly. The producer, Nordo, has a team, and we are all under NBA Mind, the number one. The slate of games tonight include the from the Nuggets at the Nets to the Spurs at the Golden State Warriors. And when you go to fanball.com, it's only $5 to play in this bad boy. $1,000 prize pool guaranteed. Learn more at fanball.com. I think it definitely, when you have a $55,000 salary cap, you know, it behooves people playing this. And I play a fair amount, specifically weekly, with my personalized daily fantasy basketball contest called the Paul Allen Posterizer. James Harden and the influential run he's on right now, it behooves people to use him, even though it sucks up a fair amount of your cash. But if you look at the scoring at fanball.com, you know, you get 1 point for a point, 1.25 for rebound, 1.5 for assist, 2 for blocks, 2 for steals. James gets all of those. But here's a sneaky 6 that you may need to win at the wire.
Ooh.
You get 6 points for a triple-double. And looking at the slate without Russell Westbrook playing this evening, if you're searching for that super special 6, the triple-double, Big Game James looks like the best option this evening, unless you think Steph's going to go for 20, 10, and 10.
The two guys I got to have in my lineup is both Harden, and then I'm on this Jokic train. You want to talk about triple-double, what he did over the weekend against the Timberwolves.
No doubt.
And I love him in the matchup this evening. Yep. So I at like him Nets. At the Nets this evening. That's my guy that I got to have, and I'm with you on Harden as
well. So now with Harden and Jokic, see, that's the art of playing this.
Yes.
With Harden and Jokic, and I'm guessing Harden is about 11,000. Jokic is somewhere in the neighborhood of 10,500. So that's 21. That's half of your entire salary cap. What are you, the LA Rams?
Yeah, but he's scoring 40 some a game.
Can't argue.
No. But that's my favorite part of this bit is trying to dagger like the value play of Jared Bayless.
No doubt.
Over the weekend is now what I'm trying to figure out tonight, and it's going to be a pain in the ass, and I'm going to put it together and try not to finish in last place.
You know what? 9 to noon has learned from a fantasy basketball standpoint. James Harden and Nikola Jokic have great box scores and probably should be used because they're very good players. But then after that, you still have a bunch of roster spots to fill out with like 20-some-odd thousand in cash. Very challenging. That's why it behooves you to battle 9 to noon this evening. Famball.com and the Paul Allen Posterizer, only $5 to get in. Let's ball. Let's have a good time.
News du Nord.
Hell yeah, let's ball. And News du Nord brought to you by Canterbury's Card Casino. Poker, blackjack, table games all year round. CanterburyPark.com.
Number one.
And let's start with this. In women's ball, came out yesterday, The Shift is the title of the article written by Maya Moore at the Players Tribune. I will not be playing professional basketball this year, she says, PA. There are many different ways to measure success, and she asks herself, am I living out my purpose? My focus in 2019 will not be on professional basketball, but instead it will be on the people in my family, as well as on investing my time in some ministry dreams that have been stirring in my heart for many years. Go to the Players Tribune. It's not a lengthy, but very poignant. It's straight to the bit as to why she'll be taking the year 2019 off. So Cheryl Reeve, head coach, general manager, the guru with the Minnesota Lynx, joined Dan Barrero yesterday. I did want to play some quotes from you here, and we'll start with this simply enough. What does this mean to your team, Cheryl? Barrero asks, from a basketball standpoint.
No question that, Maya has been one of the greatest players our league has seen, and certainly one of the all-time greats in our franchise's history. So, yeah, it's certainly going to be a different path for us this year in terms of, figuring out where, the things that Maya did for us on the court, how we can collectively sort of navigate our way through. And as you know, it's not easy. Most great teams have, at the forefront of it, great players. But I think we're doing, players like Sylvia Fowles a disservice to automatically assume that things will be drastically different.
Now, common themes with Maya Moore is that she's not only maybe the Michael Jordan of the WNBA, might be the greatest player that the WNBA has ever put out on the court. So very important piece, to the Lynx, regardless of Sylvia Fowles and all the other playmakers we've come to know and love with the Minnesota Lynx.
Yeah.
This is all stemming, if you remember, back to a report, I believe, last month, where there was some confusion, some clouds around, okay, will she or won't she play? Why won't she play?
Yeah.
There was some intimations of potentially a trade, or they were going to tag her in their version of the franchise tag, etc.
Okay.
So, Barrero, always the one that wants to figure out get to the bottom and all the meaty details. Here's the exchange. It does get a bit contentious between the host of Bumper to Bumper and Ms. Reeve.
There are times where relationships fray. Basketball relationships between athlete and coach in any sport where they're good for a while and then something gets a little bit tense.
You're reaching, and I get it. And Mike Mack sort of created this in his report. By using, the suggestion of a trade, and then it just people ran kind of roughshod over the idea that she had some sort of issue with our franchise,
right,
or perhaps with its coach, and I can just only laugh and whatever you guys need to do in terms of whatever speculation you need to have. I'm very, very confident and sleep well in knowing the relationships that I have with all the players, and certainly would feel strongly about the relationship with Maya.
That's
speculate away.
So she does, and it continues on. Very good interview between Barrero and Reeve yesterday, podcastable, KFAN.com.
Well, what was Barrero's follow-up?
Well, they continued on down that path about basically him validating the question. If that report was out there concerning the trade, then it is natural for one to ask about how relationships ebb and flow. And that's how that continues from there. And then she starts talking about the level of coverage that her team gets, as in, you don't see certain individuals covering our games throughout the season, but then this news comes out, suddenly everyone's all over it.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the frame of how that conversation continued.
Got a podcast, that bad boy, at KFAN.com, Bumper to Bumper on Demand.
Ultimately, the news is Maya Moore, of course, taking off field or going off court. To follow ministry and other personal passions.
Number two.
Back to the Timberwolves.
7 seconds.
You got to contain.
Oh, my goodness.
Step back. Three. No. Holiday gets knocked to the floor, and they're going to call a loose ball foul with .1.
To call that foul after what this game has been through with .1 seconds to go, to not let this game go into overtime.
Yeah, that really stinks, and through the time you spent with Gleeman in studio, PA, you've already acknowledged it feels like they can't call that. They can't make that call with .1 seconds left.
Yeah, I was surprised it happened.
You had head coach Ryan Saunders on to open the show today, and he would not comment on the foul in particular. His narrative was simply that there are a lot of things that happen in a game that lead you down to where it's a one-shot situation, and so unless you're perfect in those situations, then it's tough to complain about that. Although I think what he might have been referring to is being down by 13 after one and the tough shooting start and, yep, you know, Memphis getting out of control early on. But that foul shouldn't have been called. Justin Holiday, the free throws with .1 second left. 108-106 is the final. During your conversation with the head coach Ryan Saunders, however, I did think it was interesting. You noted, you know, Andrew Wiggins, God bless him, he's a tricky figure and can be even a bit frustrating at times. Here's what Ryan had to say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm the first one to say that I believe in Andrew, and I'm going to continue to believe in Andrew. And he, you know, we early in the game, we like when he gets the ball to the rim. We like when he's aggressive and in pick and rolls. And he's got a lot of talent. He's got a lot of talent. And, you know, it's about doing little things, like it is for everyone. When, hey, maybe your shot's not falling, but let's go get 7 rebounds with things. And we've seen a lot of that from him, over the past, little bit here.
Your reaction to that comment?
Well, it comes from Ryan and he's the coach, and we fully expect him to defend and or believe in Andrew Wiggins. As I mentioned with the techie, when you are so mentally out of it, like he was in front of halftime, when he went to throw the ball inbounds and threw it right to Mike Conley, who subsequently turned around and hit an emotional shot, it wasn't even close. I mean, it wasn't even a 50-50 ball. It was a 10-90.
Yeah.
And we had the 10. I'm not an Andrew Wiggins apologist. I recognize he is supremely athletic. I am one that always wishes, while whatever offensive situations through which he's working, the opportunity to become one of the NBA's best defensive players with his jumping ability, his length, his athleticism. And I can't comment on the desire because I can't comment on it because I'm not around him. That opportunity is there, and that's doing the little things, and he doesn't. And I understand what Ryan is saying. The way I framed it up was Andrew Wiggins seems to be very frustrating. What are some keys to getting him to be consistently aggressive? And then that subsequently was Ryan's answer. I don't know what the keys are. It's very frustrating. Like Ricky Davis, Michael Olowokandi was not as physically gifted as Ricky Davis and or Andrew Wiggins, but he was a frustrating player. Andrew's just very frustrating, and specifically with guys out, they really, really need his consistency, whatever tenacity he can find, and whatever aggressiveness he has. They need it badly right now, and they're not getting it enough.
Number 3.
Programming note this evening, PA, 7:30 pregame, 8 p.m. tip-off. It is Mr. Patino's team. The Golden Gophers Hoops hosting the Badgers. It's tonight at the Barn. 16-6 Gophers. They're 6-5 in the Big Ten. Badgers were 22nd in the country when the Gophers won in Madison earlier this year. They're currently 19th in the country in rankings. They've won 5 straight. Gophers, actually, if you're into bracketology-related speculation,
yeah,
most big opinions have them in the NCAA tournament as of this moment.
Great.
However, got to win tonight because they head to Lansing,
yeah,
against the top 10 ranked Spartans, and then they go to Lincoln to face the Cornhuskers, which are always tough as well.
Number 4.
And I want to get to this. I believe we'll be hitting on the Minnesota Wild later today in the 11:35. Is that the plan as of now?
Potentially, but we have Box in the Box tomorrow.
We certainly do. They lose in a shootout last night to Buffalo. I wanted to get your opinion on this, though. Nick Foles. So the idea into the offseason is Nick Foles gets to go spread his wings, go play somewhere else. The Eagles have committed to Mr. Foles as their quarterback of the future.
Yeah.
Interesting situation, though, is the team had the opportunity leading up to now to either pick up the $20 million option they have or just say, see you later, best of luck, again, go spread your wings. Well, they pick up the $20 million option. Okay, well, then Nick Foles, to get out of that, has to pay $2 million.
Yep.
Well, he just did that.
Yep.
Now the concept is that the team is likely to put the franchise tag on him, which would be somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 million for the 2019 season.
You think that's likely? Who says it's likely?
I'm just reading an ESPN report, and it says that sources believe that they are expected to do so.
Well, that
in
would,
an effort that would be...
That'd be crappy if they did
that'd
that.
That'd be Adam Schefter, and that's my point,
yeah, they,
is that, its legacy versus the business side of things with a guy that was a Super Bowl MVP.
Right. I mean, Wentz is coming off injury. Carson is the quarterback. The having the ability to have Nick as the backup, that is a terrific asset, and they've maximized that asset, and from a business running standpoint, if they honestly want, see, they still have Wentz on his rookie deal.
Yep.
So therefore, you can't afford to franchise him for $25 million. And I guess have a $25 million backup.
They'd have to cut some cap in other places, but yes.
It would be very, very surprising and atypical if they roll with Carson and their backup is a $25 million guy. I think from the...
Well, the point would be to trade him to get assets back.
Yeah. Yeah, but I'm not sure that... Well, that potentially could happen because they're... The question is, are there teams with ample salary cap room who need a quarterback?
And don't want to pay 4 years, $85 million to a guy that has been in that backup role.
Yeah, and they also, with Nick, you can look at what he's done with the Eagles, but you also can look at what he did with the Rams. And it's fair to wonder, which Nick Foles will you be getting?
Yes.
And will it be worth whatever you have to trade and or pay?
And from my basic opinion, though, I think, and it's easy for me to say, not running a billion-dollar franchise, you have a statue of him in your city. He brings you the first Super Bowl. Let him go where he wants to go.
Yeah.
Because how this runs out is they find the person with the best draft or pick-related equity to give in return.
Right. Yeah.
Versus saying, we love you, thanks for what you did. Best of luck in future endeavors.
Yeah, and that's the way I would lean. But that's the emotional side of it, you know. Where
I'm an emotional guy
in a steely business, this stuff generally does not work that way.
I know.
Interesting story though. 10:55, Berkbit in studio around the corner, 9 to noon.
You're listening to PA.
It's like I took the wrong week. Quit drinking.
On the Fan.
To the folk, Snoop Doggy Dogg and Dr. Dre is at the dope, ready to make an entrance, so back on up.
Before I have to pull the strap off the cut,
give me the microphone first so I can bust like a bubble. Compton and Long Beach together, now you know you in trouble, cause ain't nothing but a G-thang, baby. Two loped out G, so we crazy.
The Berkbit
is the label that pays
Matt. Matt Berk.
So please don't try to fake this, back to the lecture at hand. Perfection is perfected, so I'm a lad, I'm understanding. From a young G's perspective, and before me, they got a trick, I have to find a contraceptive. You never know, she could be earning her man, and learning her man,
and at the same time, burning her man.
Now when she burning, I'ma chill for a minute, cause ain't no loving good enough to get burned while I'm offended.
What? Yeah.
And that's realer than real deal.
Sounds a little dirty.
And now you hookers and hoes know how I feel. Well, if it's good enough to get off of a proper chunk, I take a small piece of some of that funky stuff.
It's like this and like that and like this and
it's like this and like this
and like that.
And,
it's like this and like that and like this and
Drake creep to the mic like a fan.
Well, I'm peeping and I'm creeping and I'm creeping.
Speaking of creeping, about the offenses in Super Bowl 5-3.
So sit back, relax, and strap.
And the Patriots have won their sixth Super Bowl title. In the early 2000s, they won 3 of 4. Now they have won 3 of the last 5. Yes, it's still a dynasty.
It's the best 10 minutes in sports. I don't care what sport, basketball, baseball, hockey. When the streamers come down and they start to play Tina Turner, there's nothing better in the world.
The Patriots Radio Network,
WBZ 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Bob Soucy and Scott Zolak, and somebody who knows a little something about the confetti plane and the Tina Turner music and hoisting the Lombardi and the Super Bowl ceremony and ring cred is Matthew Burke. St. Paul's Matt Burke in studio weekly, 9 to noon. He is at Burke Matt via Twitter, not that he ever checks. And he's nice enough to come in studio now. Good morning, Matthew.
But so when the Vikings win the Super Bowl, whenever that happens,
okay,
yeah, God willing, it's in your lifetime.
Okay,
and you're on the radio, and we play that clip, you know, that what we just played from the Patriots radio network.
Mm-hmm.
I think you'll be a little bit more excited than those two guys. It was kind of like,
no,
yeah, another Super Bowl. Yep, this is good. this is really fun.
I've thought about it.
Yeah,
it depends on game shape and what transpires right at the end of the game before the quote big call. I'm not one to craft calls, you know, but that probably would require a little crafting to do it the right way. It's immortality, and I don't know if it. Let's put it this way.
Well, those guys sounded, they were like barely like excited.
This is a negative moment, but you actually were on the team.
I know.
I don't know if it would sound like this.
Here it is. The season's on the line. Two receivers left and right. McCown takes the snap. He steps up. He's all by himself. Fires in the end zone. Caught. Touchdown. No. No. The Cardinals have the Vikings out of the playoff.
That was my son, your nephew, at age 8. So I don't know if it would have that level of excitement to it. I have no idea what it would sound like. I think from my standpoint, exasperation. Now I'm not trying to pretend at age 53 that I was here sweating it with everybody in 77 and through the four, how many ever they lost with Tarkenton and Bud Grant and stuff like that. I moved here in 98. So I was technically in 1998 at age 32 when I moved here full time to start DA in Scuba. And you're a rookie. And you guys go on that run and you lose to Atlanta. Coming from the Bay Area where I had been a racetrack announcer for 5 years in San Francisco. So I had lived 70 to 80% of the year there for 5 years. Before that, I'm in Los Angeles. The Rams played in Anaheim. The Raiders were there for a minute playing at the Coliseum. I am from Washington, D.C., so I grew up Billy Kilmer, Charlie Taylor, Ken Houston, Dyron Talbert, Ron McDowell, Chris Hamburger. I used to go to Carlisle, Pennsylvania. My mom took me, despite hay fever-related terrorism, to Carlisle, Pennsylvania, to Washington Redskins training camp. So I was the Rube that was on the other side of the court going, Sonny, 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 for Sonny Jurgensen to get an autograph or a picture. So I was kind of a guy without a team. And then I move here full-time in 98, start DA in Scuba, first-year radio, AM 1130, KFAN. You guys go to the NFC title game. I'm in love. I mean, it's you. It's Moss. It's Culpepper.
It's me, yeah.
John
Randall.
98.
Yeah, it's me.
Jimmy Hitchcock. Used to come on the radio show weekly. 7 picks, 3 to the house. Jimmy, how come you keep doing this? Have you seen our offense? Paraphrasing, I can guess a little bit. I can jump routes, and they're going to score 35. And even if I'm wrong on the route and somebody gets their double move on, we're still going to score at least 35. 7 picks, 3 to the house. Jimmy Hitchcock, former New England Patriot. I fell in love with the bit then. So I emotionally have been all in since 98, started calling games, and jumped in the Blu-ray game in 02. And here we are, year of our Lord 2019. So I've thought of this because if I'm blessed enough to be the play-by-play guy for Minnesota Vikings football on the radio when they win the first Super Bowl in the history of the state, got to do it right. I think, honestly, I mean, since you're pressing me on it, I think I'll cry.
I always love that one.
I think I will probably sob on the radio, and that will be the immortal call.
You and millions of other Vikings. I'm just saying, I think somebody who has, there's no question.
Come on!
You're one of us, okay? Let me speak for the Legion of Minnesota Vikings fans. You lifelong Minnesota Vikings fans. You are one of us. I wasn't questioning your emotional capital that you have invested in this squad.
Right.
My point was, I think somebody that has no that doesn't have a dog in the fight was probably more excited. It gave a more heartfelt, enthusiastic call, even though it's the Patriots, and it's the Patriots again.
Yeah.
Then those guys just did. They were like, and the Patriots are the Super Bowl champs. Let's go. Yeah, we got a plane to catch. You know, I mean, they were like, okay, we're done. Let's go.
They're a little arrogant with it.
Well, they're
a little arrogant with it, and I'm a big Scott Zolak guy. He's the analyst. Big boy's back. What are you looking at, Beetle? He's the bombastic analyst. And he's one of the best, if not the best, analyst in the NFL. He's fantastic.
Wow.
Yeah. And
so they have the best team and the best analyst.
When the Vikings,
embarrassment of riches.
When the Vikings have an off week, or they play Sunday night football or Monday night football, here's how rube-like I get with listening to what other people are doing around the league, because I never get to hear it. Like your guy in Green Bay, Wayne Larrabee. I know Wayne personally. I've heard a lot of Wayne's calls. I've listened to him for my palate. From a description standpoint, a theater standpoint, enunciation, use of the language, best in the NFL. Absolutely spectacular. So I really, from a snobbery standpoint, I like listening to Wayne. So I never get to hear Zolak do his bit in the first quarter against Buffalo. I only hear, big boy's back! What are you looking at, Beetle? or I only hear the highlights from the biggest moments.
Yeah.
And he really, really is good at capturing the essence of the moment. But one thing, and I'm not plugged in enough to Patriots football. I don't follow it closely enough to know about all this chip on the shoulder stuff. And through the first part of the season, people were writing us off. People didn't give us a chance. As long as you got Belichick and Brady upright, Brady started an interview after the game with, like, we were 1-2. 1-2? 75% of the league would pay $1 million to freaking be 1-2 and have 13 games to recover, you know? We were 1-2. So the Patriots had this martyr thing to them this year.
Oh, yeah. It was
that for the first time, it kind of bugged me. And then Zolak, the analyst, started going down the road of America's worst nightmare is back, and there's nothing you can do about it. I'm like, my God, Scott, come on, man. America's biggest nightmare. You have the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL, the greatest coach in the history of the NFL. Your team is probably pushing the envelope and not getting caught simply because that's the perception. Your MVP was suspended 4 games earlier this year for PED. You got the Deflategate, you got Spygate. Josh Gordon's not even on the team. I mean, there are weird things always associated with this team. You know, yet you're America's worst nightmare. I wasn't into it.
It's just jealousy, right? We're just jealous. Like, I mean, this is
I'm not.
Well, we
appreciate the bleep out of the paper.
No, we do too, but I mean, it's you're just looking at, like, this is the greatest. I mean, I think you guys say now this is the greatest football dynasty that's ever existed.
History of the NFL.
Yeah. So, I mean, you're like, hey, and for me, having gone to school in Boston and just sort of having, you know, being around that the psyche of the Boston sports fan, you know, all they do is bitch. I mean, they just bitch nonstop.
Yeah.
And now they can't curse a cat without winning a title. Yeah. You know, it's like, I mean, whatever sport, Red Sox,
that's cool.
Great. Patriots, great. Celtics,
yeah.
The history, and you get Garnett, another great. It's sort of like, geez, Louise. I mean, nobody. I don't know if anybody deserves that kind of success with their four major teams, but Boston does not deserve it. They're miserable people. You know, they complain about everything, and now all they do is win.
I know.
Hate them.
What are you looking at, Beetle?
Well, I gotta give you the other side of the spectrum. 13-3, lowest scoring Super Bowl ever. It's the sixth title for Brady, but after the 28-3 comeback, I mean, they brought the energy. Super Bowl 51.
Set behind Brady. Will move under center, trips to the right, Bennett to tight end left. Second and goal to go from the 2. Toss sweep right for James White. Tucks it under the right arm, cuts it upfield. Driving forward, diving to the goal line! A touchdown! And a title for the Patriots!
I can't believe it!
They have completed the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. Led by the greatest quarterback.
Look at Brady!
In Super Bowl and NFL annals.
One more ring!
James White
and a silver trophy is coming back to New England.
I love this team.
The confetti, the streamers.
So it's basically another minute and a half of Zolak freestyling. I love this team.
Can we hear it?
Oh, yeah.
They got balls. And when you have balls on the biggest stage, you win championship football games. What an amazing, stunning end as the Falcons just sit there in disbelief as they blow the end of this game. You could say they blew it, but I'm going to go with New England.
The Patriots won it, though.
Took it out of their hands, and it started with Hightower. Tom Brady's your runaway MVP in this game. It's over. Deflategate's over. And it doesn't end in a sweeter way than what's going to transpire here in the next 10 minutes. I've seen it all. I have seen it all.
Now, do you remember when he played, Scott Zolak?
I remember the name.
He was Brady's backup.
He was a backup quarterback, yeah. So
yeah, but see now that was cool. That didn't have the world was against us. Beetle, what are you looking at? We're America's worst nightmare.
Yeah, it wasn't concocted or constructed. That was just pure emotion, reaction. That was authentic. That was good.
Get ready to hit the Beetle for me, okay? I can't find it on the button bar.
I got it.
Okay. Now, this was from within the last couple of years. Zolak does a radio show in Boston. I can't remember what his co-host name is, but his nickname's Beetle.
Bertrand.
Yeah, so he's in the booth. He's in the Vox box. And for all the games, certainly all the home games, takes part in the pregame and the postgame, and something happened, and this radio co-host was staring at Zolak in amazement. And this is how out of body this guy gets. The guy's nickname is Beetle. Say Brady just orchestrated a masterful comeback. Here's Scott.
What are you looking at, Beetle?
I mean, listen to the crowd. He's looking at this guy going, what are you looking at, Beetle? Here it is.
What are you looking at, Beetle?
Yeah, so I love it.
That's cool.
But
That's cool.
The martyrdom with Brady and Belichick, a little too much for my palate.
It is, but then you look at what they did, and it's nothing short of amazing. It's absolutely, I mean, I don't even know how to describe it. You know, people want to ask, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, and kudos to Brady. I think what Belichick did, holding that Rams offense, it wasn't the Rams offense early on in the season. The Cooper Kupp injury, I think he's their guy. You know, he's their Edelman. That's Jared Goff's security blanket. Cooper Kupp is their big time receiver on third down. That's who you go to. But to hold them to 3 points, it's incredible. Incredible.
How much did Matt Burke loathe or love the Super Bowl? We will unveil that after a short pause, which includes the opportunity to put a grand in your hand.
It's the National Cash Contest. What am I looking at, Beetle? I'm looking at an opportunity for somebody out there, just by listening to the Fan every hour, to throw in a keyword and have a chance to put a grand in their own hand. Today's 11 a.m. keyword, super. Text the word super to 200-200. That is super to 200-200. Chance to put a grand in your hand. The National Cash Contest. Text and data rates do apply.
You're listening to PA.
Faith is belief without proof.
On the Fan.
Mystic Lake and the Fan want to send you and a guest to Player Up, the Midwest's amateur esports tournament. It's February 15th through the 17th. You can win spectator passes simply by registering. All you got to do, go to KFAN.com, keyword contest. Come on.
So get up, get a move on, and get your groove on. It's the D-R-E, the spectacular. In a party, I go for your neck.
No way!
As I drain a victim, juggle the vein, and maintain the lead bloodstain. So don't complain, just chill. Listen to the beats I spill. Keeping it real enables me to make another meal. Still, brothers run up and try to kill it real, but get popped like a pimple. So call me clear as still. I wipe fools off the face.
The Burke Bit.
Did you hate the Super Bowl?
I actually love the Super Bowl.
Right, because you're a nuanced guy.
Well, I mean, I'm not some snob. I don't know. We've talked about it, but I like to think that defense still matters. But that game, look, if you just said before it started, hey, look, I know how this ends. It's going to be 13-3, and LA is going to be 2 of 15 or whatever on third down. You're going to think, oh, that sounds like a horrible game.
Yeah.
But when you're watching it, you're just waiting. The play that's going on, if this could be the play, like who's going to make that one big offensive play? If LA would have made it, the whole game would have been changed. Turns out, Brady hits Gronk down there, gets it down to the two. Like that's the big play. But it's just you're just one big play away from the whole game changing.
Right.
And so I thought it was exciting.
I'm glad you said that. FIBA Fairness and Burke Act. Matt and I don't chat about like what's coming up on our segment.
Never.
I'll text you and go Wednesday 10:55 studio. You'll write in, and that's it.
There's no prep, which might surprise the listeners at home. There's no prep.
Well, no, there is. I mean, I put not stuff for together me. For
no,
you.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I don't.
But I like you to go off the cuff. So I'm glad you said it that way because after the Super Bowl, after I took my friend Erie home, I got back, and that's when I'm going to sit in the sinkhole and I'm going to write what I want to go in the open. But there are so many people, or at least I think there are so many people, who will go contrarian on it off what everybody is saying or thinking. So if the majority of the people are worst Super Bowl ever, not enough scoring, too low scoring, super boring, there are people who purposely will take the other side just so they can stick out. After I wrote the entire open, I sat there and thought about it saying, how much do I have to explain? I'm not attempting to be contrarian here. The dynamic between Wade Phillips and Josh McDaniels and Belichick and Brian Flores and Sean McVay was so fascinating and compelling how difficult it was to move the ball, score points, and the manipulation of idea and defense during the course of not a game, a quarter or a half, a series. I thought it was so fascinating.
And I think when you see, you know, I'm normally not a fan. I guess in the past I've always been like, why is there 2 weeks between the championship and the Super Bowl? And you think maybe the only reason it is because of the hype and this and that. Now, logistically for the teams and the players, you need the extra week to kind of figure it all out, you know, get your family squared away and all that. But to let McVay and Belichick and Phillips and McDaniels go into the lab for an extra week.
Yeah.
And I mean, so then it's just that much bigger, right?
Big time.
We've both have had enough time to figure out exactly how they want to attack.
Right.
We're all talking about Belichick and Flores and the job they did, but how about Wade Phillips?
About Wade.
I mean, listen, Tom Brady was very mediocre.
Yeah.
Right? Very mediocre in the end. First series, throws a pick.
Kind of looks like he might be at the end.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't know. And now, the schemes were great, but at the end of the day, both defenses, and mostly both defensive lines, came to play and beat the offensive line that they were going against.
Oh, great.
And that's, you know, we talk about all these schemes and players, and he's a genius, that's a genius. At the end of the day, it's still man-whoop-a-man game. And I thought the defensive lines for both teams outplayed the offensive lines, and that's why both quarterbacks struggled and both offenses struggled.
Why couldn't the Rams score?
I mean, Goff was just never comfortable. Yeah. He was just never comfortable in the game. And the other thing, too, and there's so much we overlook from the Patriots. I guess, I don't know this for a fact, but I think this is how it has to be. Or, I mean, Belichick's a genius, blah, 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 blah. I think that on their defense, right, who are the stars? Trey Flowers, I'd say Trey Flowers is an elite player.
Yeah.
I think Dante Hightower is probably an elite player. Everybody else is just above average. And I don't say just above average, but everybody else is pretty good. Like there's no, oh, we've got the Aaron Donald bit here and then, you know, so we pay him a bunch. And then, you know, everybody else is kind of, there's some liabilities around. I think the Patriots defense is just everybody, it's just a bunch of solid players where the NFL's, everybody's going after the stars. They're like, no, we want all the guys in the middle class, you know, and a la, you look over the years, like a Rob Ninkovich. You know, like those types of names.
Like Vrabel,
right? Yeah. Like these guys who nobody else is saying, hey, we got to go get that
guy. The guy who used to work you, Vince Wilfork.
I don't remember him working. No, he did work me one time.
I'm sorry about that.
I worked him the last time. But like, I think like they're like, no, we want the middle class. We want all the guys who are just solid starters, and we can win with that. Remember the first year of free agency, or the first day of free agency this last year, where it was, I don't even remember who was signing, but we went through the list, and it was like five big-name guys, right, signed first.
Oh, yeah.
And then that same day, the Patriots released that they re-signed who? Nate Ebner.
All right.
Special teams. Special former rugby player, special teams guy. Like, that's Belichick saying,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, great. Go spend $100 million on this guy. We just re-signed Nate Ebner to a two-year deal with no signing bonus.
Yeah.
Like, that's the Patriots. And so I think you look at their defense, it's just a bunch of really good players. And their secondary as a whole, I've never seen a group of guys that play the ball so well.
Yeah.
I don't know what the stats are, but I got to believe that they were last in the NFL in pass interference calls. They just seem to, they're so well coached, so fundamentally sound.
Mm-hmm.
When that ball's coming, they get their head around, they play the ball, and they rarely get called for PI. And they just, it was an unbelievable performance.
Belichick. The identity of the AFC title game, fullback James Devlin, the one, you know, not many had heard of, but then, well, he scored two TDs against the Vikings. He had, into our game, he had one carry, one touchdown, left the game, three carries, three touchdowns on the season. James Devlin. Yeah, he was so instrumental in their victory at Kansas City. James Devlin, defensive end at Brown. Belichick takes him, makes him a fullback. So that's Belichick. Just from having Zoltán Mesko, the Romanian punter, taking the
ball. Always has a left-footed punter, too. Don't you love it? Because the ball spins differently.
Boom.
It's just something to give the other team something. They got to bring in a left-footed punter after practice on Wednesday and Thursday and kick to their return guy. Because the balls, it's just those little things. They all add up, right?
Vrabel catching touchdown passes despite being a linebacker.
Troy Brown.
Having the accomplished wrestler, I think his name was Stephen Neal, on the offensive line. You know, accomplished wrestler, turn him into a football player. Their right tackle, Sebastian Vollmer. He was of German descent.
Didn't even speak English.
Played at the University of Houston for like 2 minutes. Belichick brings him in, starting right tackle for multiple Super Bowls. And the ultimate example, Troy Brown.
Here's the thing about the Patriots.
We're short on DBs.
I keep saying, like, here's the thing. It's 100 things, right? What was the identity of the Patriots offense and defense this year?
Well, where I credit Belichick and his staff is it changed middle of the year.
But I think it changes almost week to week. Like,
right.
They're always known to do, especially when the Super Bowl, right?
It became run first bit.
Biggest game of the year. What does everybody do? They say, well, we are who we are. This is our bread and butter. This is the girl we took to the dance, so we're going to keep going this way, right?
Yeah.
Belichick is known for just totally changing it up in the Super Bowl. When they played the Eagles however many years ago, right? New England was a 3-4 team. They come out in the Super Bowl, what'd they do? They're playing 4-2, and they're walking up both linebackers into the A-gaps.
Wow.
Because he knew the West Coast offense back then was susceptible to backers in the A-gaps. I don't know if you read that. It was a long bit on, I think it was in the Washington Post, on what did the Patriots defense do. You know, most of the year, they play man. The Rams, their offense is heavily predicated on man beaters. So what'd they do? It looked like man. At the snap of the ball, they switched to zone.
Wow.
Like, he's not afraid to just... Total and credit to the players too to say, hey, last week we had the fullback and we were running inside and running ISO, and then the next week we might spread it out. I mean, James White, the 28-3 comeback was such a weapon. I mean, and there were games this year too out of the backfield. You couldn't stop James White against Kansas City. James White was huge. Did James White even play in the Super Bowl?
One catch.
I mean, you don't even know, right? They can change so much week to week to week, and that's a credit to the coaches for taking those chances and coaching those guys up, and the players to be able to adjust and do things totally different week to week, just depending on the game plan and who the opponent is.
BerkBit Weekly 9 to noon. Who's better and why? Jared Goff or Kirk Cousins?
I don't know. I mean, they're both pretty similar, right? Like, they both seem to win it. I mean, I would say, you know, Goff's a little bit better when it breaks down, maybe a little bit more athletic and is okay running around and having to throw it, but I mean, I would say both of those guys are, and this is most quarterbacks, okay? Most of those guys, they need everybody else around them to be pretty good, right? Like, if protection's there and the look is what they think the look is going to be, they can deliver the ball.
Yep.
I mean, they could hit the bullseye from 30 yards away. It's when that gray area happens. It's when protection breaks down or whatever. You get a look that you didn't see in practice, that you hadn't seen on film, where you know you have to schoolyard it, playground it a little bit. I don't think that that's their strength.
What lesson do you think Sean McVay learned from this game?
Mm. I don't know. See, I have. I mean, you know, I'm not on social media or internet right now because I'm on my Exodus 90. I don't know what he said, but I would probably say don't.
Right after the game, he said I was outcoached.
Well, he's outcoached, yeah. But see,
I think he did that to take heat.
Take it off his players.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, he might have been outcoached. I would say I still don't understand that, and I don't know if they've got to the bottom of the Todd Gurley mystery.
Right.
But I would say, look, I mean, you went out against Dallas, who's a great run-stopping team,
yeah,
and you ran the ball down their throats. And I would probably say with the way that if you look back, he probably I would think he would say, I wish I'd have called more runs. Because even the running game, it's right. You run in the first quarter, in the second quarter, and it's 2 yards, it's 3 yards, it's 4 yards. But you do that for later on in the game. And I think with that O-line, a veteran O-line, and the way that Belichick had this, I don't know if you saw what he was doing, but I saw this in the AFC Championship and in the Super Bowl. He's basically locking the linebackers on the wideouts, or the DBs on the wideouts, and the linebackers are taking the O-line. You're taking the O-line and the back, and so the linebackers would, at the snap of the ball, they would just kind of stand there and wait to see where was the back going.
Yep.
And so if the back went to the right, the linebacker on the left, he would add to the rush about a second later. So what that did is that prevented any double teams from going on. So now it's basically 5 one-on-1 battles. One guy's got to win.
Yeah.
Right? And it would be a Trey Flowers one play. It was Lawrence Guy one play. It was whoever, right? I would say he said, look, I wish we just get up there and mash him and give it to C.J. Anderson, give it to Todd Gurley, and see what happens.
As a lifelong Minnesotan, how have you handled the weather of last week?
That was a little rough. That reminded me, my senior year of high school, 1993, 94, I'm sure it was probably 94, was after the first year. We had a week of school canceled because of cold. And I think at one point it was -35. So that brought me back. I always said, yeah, I know what -30 is like. I might have experienced it, but I didn't know it. I mean, that was that hurt a little bit, right?
Yeah,
that hurt. And that just kind of reminded you who's in charge. And 4 days of the kids home from school, that's tough on mama.
Do people here complain too much about weather?
I think they talk about the weather too much. You're like, oh my gosh, can you believe how cold it is? Well, yeah, I can. It's Minnesota in the winter. I can believe it. Like, right. Are you new to town?
Right.
I think they talk about it. I don't think you complain, but it's just it's too much of a topic of conversation.
Last one. What would mean most to you and why? The Wild winning the Stanley Cup, the Wolves winning a NBA title, or the Twins winning a World Series?
I've been through the Twins bit. The Wild really aren't my team. I mean, I was a North Stars kid growing up, so I haven't really embraced the Wild fully like I should.
Okay.
I've told you, when the Timberwolves came to town, I was in seventh grade. They played at the Metrodome. My parents would drop me off with a buddy. We'd pay $3 and sit in the upper deck and watch Pooh Richardson and Tony Campbell and Sidney Lowe and Scott Brooks and,
that's awesome,
and Felton Randy Spencer, Brewer. Randy Brewer. I mean, you couldn't really see him because you're in the upper deck of the Metrodome.
Yeah.
But I think the Timberwolves winning the NBA championship would make me happy.
The best. Travel safely on these murky roads, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you.
Matt Burke. Is it MattBurkeandCompany.com?
That's correct.
Matt Burke speaking, or?
Matt Burke and Company.
MattBurkeandCompany.com to learn more about his speaking endeavors. Final segment next.
You're listening to PA.
I don't really answer preschool questions.
On the Fan.
I can't wait. I can't wait until tomorrow, 'cause tomorrow might very well be too late. I can't wait, I can't wait until tomorrow, 'cause tomorrow could never come. I know it could end any minute, but I pray tomorrow comes, but it could be too late. I'm ready to smile, but for a long while, wouldn't take much to get me down.
All righty. Thank you very much for listening to 9 to Noon today. It's 11:44, Paul Allen, Brian Heating and Cooling Studios, FM 100.3, KFAM. Vox in the Box Radio tomorrow. Barring something unforeseen, I promise to be there at 9 a.m., despite the fact that I've already had three people either associated with the hockey team or FM 100.3 KFAN, voice concern about my travels from potentially Eden Prairie to Victoria to drop the 16-year-old off at school, then to St. Paul. After 9 to noon, was late for the performance on Monday, the day after the Super Bowl. We now have those who occupy corner offices in very loving fashion a little too concerned about the punctuality of the host. One show late does not a career make. So I will be in the penalty box at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Don't worry, friends. Shake. Don't worry how rough the waters are. Just let me get the ship home. The ship will arrive on time tomorrow. It's a Vox in the Box Thursday, but most importantly for those listening right now, White Horse Radio tomorrow, 9 to noon.
Oh, my gosh. Above average at that.
I think it's time for yours truly to stop by Target on the way home from 9 to noon today, or maybe Walmart, but a store that sells a bunch of different things. And I need to find a stuffed white horse.
I always love that one.
A stuffed white horse to bring to XL Energy Center tomorrow, because it's White Horse Radio, and it gives the coach, Bruce Boudreau, start the show with Boudreau, gives the head coach an opportunity to call me an idiot. And he loves capitalizing on that opportunity. But 9 to noon fully intends to traipse through the snow, despite the fact when the Wild kept getting down yesterday, it's 1-0, it's 1-1, it's 2-whatever, we tie it, and then like 8 seconds later, Buffalo scores. They got guys scoring who were in the minor leagues like basically the day before. Eichel, Mittelstadt, all good. Eden Prairie Eagles, Lee Smith rivalry, Mittelstadt versus a Kyle Rowe. That was great. We lost. I know we got a point, but we lost. We lost. We took an L. So we got a point. Cool. Needed it. Every point's needed. I got it. Cool. We've lost three games in a row. So, okay, yes, we got a point v. Chicago. Yes, we got a point v. Buffalo. And we got nothing against Dallas.
2 out of 6 ain't good.
Yeah, 2 out of 6, copyright meatloaf, 2 out of 6 is bad. So you keep doing that, and you're going to edge yourself right out of the postseason. So when I saw Nordo's favorite player, Victor Rask, leading the shootout brigade, first guy in the shootout, I'm like, it's the new guy?
Oh, my gosh. Above average.
And then he didn't even get off a shot. I mean, it's not Devin Setoguchi embarrassing. You know, that's an obscure reference, but for those not in the know, they used Devin Setoguchi in a shootout in Montreal. Okay? Not at Arizona, not at Fort Lauderdale, not at Columbus or Atlanta when the Thrashers were in vogue with Bruno. Montreal, Guy Lafleur, Jacques Lemaire, Ken Dryden, Fleur de Lis, whatever it's called, Le Bleu Bon Rouge. It's Montreal, it's hockey immortality. Setoguchi settles into the shootout, middle of his stride, approaching the goaltender, slips and falls.
I always love that one.
I hit the radio the next day and I'm like, messing up in a shootout and falling or losing your edge, it happens. It's probably happened to Sidney Crosby at some point of his career and or life. But it can't happen in Montreal. Don't fall and lose your edge in a shootout in an original six situation. So ours was at Buffalo. I mean, Buffalo's kind of hockey immortality. Dominic Hasek, Gilbert Perreault, and so on and so on. But, like, when we led the shootout with our new guy, who, correct me if I'm wrong here, I didn't write it down, but I think I saw it somewhere last night. He was like one for his last eight in shootouts.
I believe that's in his career.
In his career.
And he hadn't taken one in 3 years.
Yeah, since 15-16. Yeah, makes a lot of sense to lead with him. So now I got to wait for the postgame show. Now I got to wait for the Boudreaux interview. Paraphrasing, Russo. Why Rask? Boudreaux. There was a reason. Russo elated his game. Presses. Bruce comes back. Again, there was a reason. Next question. So now we get to speculate. What was the reason? Or shall I say, who told Bruce to use Rask first? Was it the owner? Was it the GM? Was it Victor? In what would be very enterprising fashion. I mean, wanting to be a better part of the team. One of the guys. Part of the guys. Maybe it was Victor who said, like, hey, if we go to a shootout, can I lead off? I don't believe it was Boudreaux.
Now, Koivu has participated in a lot of shootouts. Mm-hmm. He has the knee bit. He leaves. And maybe that was part of the reasoning for Mr. Rask starting the shootout.
I don't believe that to be the case. And I am not one to hit Twitter, write breaking, put a colon after it, and put whatever I think the reason is.
All good.
I'm just telling you I don't believe it was Boudreaux's choice to use him first.
Okay.
Okay. How could it possibly be? He hadn't scored a shootout goal in 3 years.
An attempted one in 3 years.
An attempted one in... So that pissed me off. So, and I spent the entire game, you know, I spent the entire game trying to figure out, why isn't Nick Seeler playing? Now, I don't think Nick Seeler is Duncan Keith or Drew Doughty. Okay, he's not one of the greatest defensemen in the history of Le Bleu Bon Rue. But why Boteto over... Who is Boteto?
New guy.
And why is he playing? Why is the Sealer playing?
It's the tweaks.
No, it's part of the why do we make a trade every 5 minutes for people nobody's heard of. My God. So at that moment, I started grooming the white horse.
Mm.
I went out to the barn, to the mythical barn, and found the proverbial horse, the white horse. And I started grooming him. Cleaned out the hoofs. Called the farrier, got the horse shod, combed the mane, cut down the coat, make sure we left enough for the chilly temperatures, and I was grooming the white horse. Why? Because White Horse Radio is tomorrow.
Yes, it is.
And 9 to noon is riding in on a white horse because we've lost 3 in a row. We took a dirty loss last night. Somebody nobody can recognize started the shootout. The first part of the shootout was embarrassing. Boudreaux after the game was vague with the, quote, there was a reason, end quote. And the Wild vibe is weird right now. What are we rolling into tomorrow, Vox in the Box? It might be very tenuous. Might be very edgy. Might be very testy. And also, will we even get there with copyright bump, weather terrorism? That's going to be unbelievable. So see, all of that will unfurl tomorrow, including... Connor McDavid and something called Draisaitl.
Yeah.
Trying to take my $100. Oh, my heavens. An unbelievable Vox in the Box coming tomorrow.
It is going to be fun.
We're riding in on a white horse because we are White Horse Radio, and the Wild will take two tomorrow night and give zero.
Hallelujah, brother.
They will take two and give zero. Connor McDavid, this ass. White Horse Radio has arrived. And I will be the one guiding said white horse. Paul Allen, Brian Heating and Cooling Studios, FM 100.3, KFAN, producer, rap, shop.
Thanks to the Paddy Wagon, sponsoring the 9 to noon show wraps. Nine to noon at the X through the snow on a white horse. It's the radio version of what nerds call the force. Start slow, claw back, fall. Rinse, repeat. At least we got a point, they say, in defeat. Rewind. Ryan Saunders started the show. Clipped at the wire by a tough call and free throws. If Wiggins does care, how would we know it? Another close game to mediocre teams and they blow it. So, shovel the driveway, find myself panting. Tripped on the curb, now I'm face planting. Dreams of sunshine, summer and flip. Flops, the only vibe we got, cause our teams have no pop.
And he's loose!
L. High five!
fives for everybody. What are you looking at, Beetle?
Nine to noon. Breaking away when you can.
There are many, many positives I can get out of this game.
The game is over.
Just listen. Just listen. Somebody.
If it's good news or money, leave a message.
To listen back to a podcast of today's show, visit the Paul Allen Channel on the iHeartRadio app or go to KFAN.com.